Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sands of Bone by Logan D. Irons, narrated by Liam Price. 1. The smoke singed the Christians' noses, throats and lungs, every part of them stripped raw and coated in ash. Infantrymen hacked and spat around him, struggling to maintain any kind of formation surrounding the mounted knights and sergeants. Both men and horses dipped their heads in exhaustion, backs bent, hooves barely able to carry the armoured warriors. Most of the soldiers were quiet as they marched, too weak and mouths too parched to utter a word. The only sounds among them the methodical tread of boots, jangle of ringed mail, and the soft thumps of shields upon arms and legs. Every sound was of a desperate army on the move. A dust cloud lingered over all of them, threatening to smother them in grit if the smoke and heat did not kill them first. It obscured visibility between the three hosts of the army that had broken apart from one another in a column that stretched over a mile long. A spearman stumbled and fell nearby, his coat of mail clanging with a muted thud as his shield crashed into the ground. A comrade bent over him, attempting to pull him upright, but the footmen were a brittle river that diverted around the fallen, refusing a second glance. "Get him up," Robert Cutno said, his large frame and height domineering over these men. Bloodshot eyes stared back as if the man were 1,000 yards away. He did not know the soldier, but he bore a golden cross on his surcoat, marking him one of the king's garrison in Jerusalem. When neither man moved, he removed the scarf covering his face, revealing his dark brown beard that contrasted with his blonde hair. He stroked the scar along his nose before he repeated himself in irritation. "You don't move, you'll die." With cracked fingers, he grasped the fallen man by the surcoat and easily hauled him to his feet. "You have to keep moving." Then he shoved both awestruck men onward, not bothering to see if they followed. He had wrapped a scarf around his neck and face once more, meant to keep the dust and sun away, but wasn't sure if it worked that well. He wiped the grit from his eyes, causing him to blink, and clutched his long axe, his shield strapped on his back. On their flanks, riders lined the hazy horizon, always there watching the army struggle forward. Silhouetted horse warriors, short bows in hands, glimpses of yellow flags flapping in their midst. They had been a dangerous shadow for every step the Christian army had taken since they departed their encampment, a constant thorn in the Christian side, their sole purpose to harass and exhaust the enemy until they could be dispatched by other means. They were the scouts of the enemy's sultan, Salah al-Din, but known to the Christians as Saladin. Saladin was ruler of the vast Ayyubid Empire, land stretching from Egypt to Upper Mesopotamia, and as far south as the tip of the Arabian Peninsula. He was Islam's greatest hero in both intellect and military prowess, the defender of the two holiest sites of Islam, Mecca and Medina. And he had set his domineering gaze upon the third holiest site to their kind, a shared place of worship with Jews and Christians, Jerusalem. The Sultan's sole purpose was to unite the Muslim world against a common enemy, the Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem, and snuff it out like a dying candle flame. It was an undertaking that would eliminate every Christian or expel them back to their former homelands. He'd baited the Christians to war, and now they marched through Hell's Gate, led by an impetuous king. Guy of Lusignan, now the regent king of Jerusalem, had camped his mighty Christian host at Sophraia, a small hamlet built around the only available water source for leagues. There had been enough water for a village and the first third of the Christian army, who drank it dry in less than an hour, leaving a brown sludge for the rest of the army. The rest of the army hadn't had water in 2 days, which made the misery of the night even worse, as the camp was under a constant barrage of arrows. He'd slept beneath his shield in the arid darkness, hoping a Saracen arrow didn't find him. The rising sun had brought no reprieve to the Christians' purgatory. Shouts of dismay escaped from withering throats as they were awakened to the hills surrounding the village ablaze. Orange and yellow flames fanned by Saladin's horse archers. The horse archers operated with ease, seemingly everywhere at once, sometimes getting so close in the smoke no one knew to raise their shields until the arrows whispered death into them. Black smoke swirled over the road, covering the enemy's movements, the wind current trapping the smoke over the army. It was a walk through hell, and the only part they were missing was the brimstone. Every man and beast in the column still dreamt of water, caring little for the threat posed by the enemy's arrows. It was their solitary quest. Everything else flies on horse dung. The men swore to all manner of oaths, both silent in prayer and allowed to God to be righteous forevermore, only to be allowed a decadent sip, to drag their exhausted bodies to the nearest well and drink until their bellies were as swollen as a woman with child. To make matters worse, somewhere near Tiberias, Saladin's main army waited to engage them, blocking the path to the besieged city and the fresh waters of Lake Tiberias, known to some as the Sea of Galilee. Cutnose wiped the crusted spit from the corners of his mouth. If the army didn't find water soon, Saladin may secure his conquest without ever having to fight a battle. The entire kingdom was a crinkling parchment left to bake in the sun until it was swept away by the wind. The only shred of luck so far in the debacle of a march was that Saladin's horse archers had largely let them be for the last miserable hour, allowing the blazing sun to slowly cook them to death. It was a pessimistic luck, and it made him wonder what evils the enemy prepared for them, or if they simply waited for the Christians to collapse from thirst. Then the Saracens could walk their horses leisurely down the hills and trample the exhausted Christians at their leisure.
"Deus vult!"
cried a priest nearby, lifting his arms to the sky as he sought the Lord. A cluster of dusty, white-robed priests and canons surrounded a cart whose wheels creaked with every rotation. The servants of the cross carried staffs to guide them, a vigorous holy song breaking from cracked lips for most of the morning. But the dryness and lack of water had smothered their fervour to a croak. At the centre of the wagon stood a giant gold inlaid cross like a small boat with a massive mast. The cross itself only contained a splintered fragment of the original that Christ had been crucified upon, the rest lost to the sands of time. It was tall enough for men to see from a considerable distance, the sun reflecting brilliantly, a holy blindness burning those who chose to gaze upon it. Every major host in the history of the Kingdom of Jerusalem had been accompanied by the true cross into battle. It gave the men courage, compelling them to fight harder to defend the sacred relic from heathen harm. Cutnose and the remaining Jerusalem garrison marched within easy view of the true cross, trailing just behind the king's mounted retinue. King Guy was encircled by roughly 200 knights, their banners bearing all manner of crosses, gold and red. Horse heads bobbed beneath the weight of the knights as they laboured forward. Guy had been made king by frequent deaths in the royal family, and propelled to his current station by an advantageous marriage. It was far above the birthright of a younger son of the Lord of Lusignan, near Poitou in France. Now he led to war almost 30,000 soldiers and knights, the entirety of the Kingdom of Jerusalem's fighting men. Eager to appear confident in the role as king, he ignored his rival, Lord Raymond III of Tripoli's advice against sending relief to Raymond's own wife, besieged within Tiberias's citadel. Raymond saw the siege for what it was, a ploy to draw them into a disadvantageous position for a pitched battle. Accusations of cowardice resounded between the rival lords of the Levant counselling the king. What man would wish his wife left to the ravages of the infidel? It was an inopportune time for the nobles to feud over the best direction of the army, considering their enemy, Saladin, was sagacious in strategies against the western warriors, and every moment the march wore on was like a flogging that refused to stop. Ahead of Guy's host, the Lord of Tripoli led the vanguard, his knights boasting red surcoats with white or yellow crosses matching their shields. Raymond's infantry, a host of spearmen and men-at-arms, flanked his cavalry, shields turned outward toward the hostiles. Black smoke continued to churn down the hills like a bitter avalanche, flowing along their northern flank. Orange flames engulfed the brush, whips of the wind driving it onward, covering the road in an opaque greyness, visibility of the other contingents coming and going with the winds. Shouts from the knights brought the column grinding to a halt. Coordinating the various contingents was cumbersome, accompanied by a good deal of flag-waving and messengers galloping between the hosts. Despite being within eyeshot of one another, the entire army drifted concerningly apart, making support and battle deployment a concern. Horse archers shadowed them through the smoke, faces covered, growing closer to the rearguard. The rear contingent was led by Lord Balian de Ibelin and contained two smaller companies of elite heavy horse, the Religious Order of Knights, the Templars, and their brethren, the Hospitallers. They were scarcely visible, which meant the rear guard continued to lag dangerously behind.
"You see what's happening?"
rasped Durand. He was a spearman from the King's garrison of Jerusalem, of which five of the six companies of guards were present in the column. The sixth company was filled with grey-bearded men and the young, along with anyone too sick to march, which remained to keep peace in the city in the king's absence. Durand was probably the only man Cutnose considered a friend, for he largely kept to himself, and the man made a much better guard than a soldier. Like most guards of the city, he was more militia than a professional soldier, relatively lazy and often drunk on the job. Durand was accustomed to standing, not walking in a full coat of mail, helm, shield and spear. Not that any man would dare attempt such a journey without water. Cutnose squinted, trying to make out what transpired in the rear. Even with his enhanced sight, it was hard to make out much more than shadows in the greyness. He caught rapid movement along the flank of the rearguard. In the distance, hooves pounded the earth. The horse archers galloped for the mass of Christian infantry, a cloud of dust trailing behind before they launched a whirlwind of arrows at the Christians. A few men fell wounded or slain. One could not tell the true number of casualties from afar. A knight was thrown from his feathered horse. Faint shouts carried over the road, and Balian's contingent limped to a halt to defend themselves. The footmen shuffled as they tightened their ranks like a serpent drawing itself into a coil. They turned outward shoulder to shoulder. The mounted knights and sergeants enclosed as the infantry planted their shields between them and the enemy arrows. Another scattered volley fell among them. Arrows found new homes in shields or were deflected by armor. Yet the slow to raise a shield in defense, or the unlucky, suffered wounding or worse, death from above. As the center and vanguard continued to march, the distance grew between the rearguard and the rest of the army. "The Saracen horse archers are delaying Balian's advance." After pouring more arrows into Balian's men, the horse archers fled across the field, reins whipping sleek horses, fleeing like scurrying rodents. It was a common tactic to draw out the Christian heavy cavalry, exhaust their mounts as they chased, taking any power they had out of their charge, then surrounding them and shower them with arrows until they were mountless, wounded, or tired enough to be swarmed over. A veteran commander in the Levant, the Lord of Ibelin, did not take the bait, and after the horse archers retreated, the infantry hefted their shields and the rearguard began its painful trudge to reconnect with the center.
"How much further to water?"
Durand said, rubbing his eyes and squinting forward. "Another few miles," Cutnose pointed. "Through the smoke there be two hills. They resemble the horns of an ox. That be the horns of Hattin. That's where we march. That's where we find water."
"What if it's like the last village? Poisoned?"
Durand said. The thought made Cutnose grimace. Where there should have been a pool with drinkable water, instead was the bloated bodies of maggot-infested goats, cows, and slaughtered prisoners, floating face down in a shallow pool, riddling it with disease. Clouds of flies swarmed the dead, stench of death encircling the well. Despite the vileness, some men drank it. They'd fallen ill quickly, left to die along the road. Durant stared at the cloudless sky, chest heaving, the sun a raging yellow ball of heat above.
I don't think I'll make it. You will do as you must.
The young man stared at him with distant, bloodshot eyes.
How are you carrying on?
The situation was brutal, but Cutnose's gift, acquired over 80 years ago, had rendered him superior endurance amongst other more primal traits, best left to the dark of night. Heat don't bother me as much as it used to. He squinted at the sun for a moment, knowing that eventually it would take him like the rest, albeit he may be the last man standing when it happened. Durand bowed his head near collapse.
My armor weighs down my chest. I can't breathe.
You fall behind now, you'll die. Of that I am sure. You make for those hills, one foot over the other, and you'll have a chance. Cutnose eyed the mounted archers again. The situation grew more dire with every step. He wondered if the army could reverse course, but he never knew a king to turn his army around in the face of humiliation, especially a man trying to prove that he was worthy of being king.
Forward!
Came a shout. Men lifted weighty shields and resumed their march. A bold priest took up a song, his voice wavering in the heat as he forced the song from his lips. Chins to chest, weapons hung in sweaty hands, the men trudged onward. They marched in a painful purgatory, neither making any progress toward water nor going away from it. Every step felt useless, hindered and painful, suffering only ever increasing. Then Cutnose heard the eerily familiar thunder of hooves. Black smoke swirled, screening their approach. Visibility was almost nil. Men turned, trying to see the enemy.
Shields up!
Cutnose shouted, his voice a raw wound. The men closest to him raised their shields with all the strength they had, lifting them as if to salute the sun. Cutnose spun his shield from his back and joined them, the edges of shields banging one another as they overlapped. The infantry instinctually came closer together, rubbing mailed shoulders and stepping backward to enclose the mounted men. Tense moments passed. Cutnose tried to gulp, but found his tongue and throat far too swollen for the effort.
Perhaps they will not attack,
Durand croaked. Cutnose could only curl his lip before the arrows hailed upon them. There was a hiss in the air above them. An arrow quivered in a shield. Hundreds more plummeted upon them like serpents thrown from the heavens. Wood thudded and cracked as they blocked the barbed arrows, lodging themselves into their shields. A horse screamed and collapsed, then another tipped on its side, sending knights crashing to the ground with it. The armored square tightened even closer together, defending the cross and knights with their shields and bodies. When the arrows stopped, they waited, holding their breaths, standing shoulder to shoulder, arms shaking with fatigue. A lord barked and their march began anew. Shouts carried from the rearguard again as they were attacked and then the vanguard ahead. The process repeated itself endlessly. The army barely seemed to move, each assault dropping a few more men in their ranks and a few more knights unhorsed or wounded. After another hour, the king ordered them to halt. See there? Cutnose pointed at the hills. A distant gaze had taken hold of the young man.
We only need to go a mile farther.
Aye. Cutnose shaded his eyes. A mass of cavalry came together in the front of the vanguard, thousands of riders impeding their path. More of the enemy. Hundreds of horse archers poured toward both flanks of the vanguard. Raymond's men hunkered inward, a gigantic rectangle of Christian armor and men, shields high. Arrows rained among them with the intensity of an angry god in the heavens, and the fortress made of men held. Within moments, a horn pierced the air and Raymond's knights sallied forth. The heavily armoured knights burst from the interior and gave chase to the horse archers. They lumbered over the field in comparison to their fleet enemy, and soon the knights lost cohesion and were forced to turn back, riding hard again for the safety of the infantry. This was the sixth sortie Raymond had conducted, and each one tired his mounts and men, leaving a few behind feathered with arrows. Cutnose shook his head. Their backs were against the rocks, and the tide came to wash them away. He faced the rearguard. Thousands of more riders mirrored them at a distance along the road, almost as if they were on a leisurely ride to attend a feast. It was clear Balian saw this, his knights shifting to charge. King Guy stretched his neck, trying to make out the various movements of battle on every side of him. They trap us. The centre contingent remained stationary. Horses neighed in irritation. Knights shouted and pointed as they bore witness to the enemy movements. Guy sat with his indecision, each host requiring his aid, and whichever he did not rally to would surely be overwhelmed. Instead, he watched as more horse archers charged Raymond's flanks. More footmen fell. Gaps formed in the armour surrounding the critical force of mounted knights. "Pick a fight, Guy," Cutnose muttered. The army only stood a chance with one of its exits open. Cutnose weighed the king's options. They had to make for the water. It was the only way to have any semblance of an army when the sun set. "Forward!" came the order again. The centre moved toward Raymond's men. Cutnose was unsure what they would do when they got there. There was nothing to relieve them from the smoke, arrows and heat unless they reached Hattin. Then there would be a sliver of hope. But hope was a worm-bored ship shattering on the rocks of Saladin's army. "They're breaking!" Cutnose said, but his voice was lost amongst the men. He was but one man, and this was a game of armies, not individual warriors. The centre continued to advance for the van. More infantry fell in the vanguard. There was always a tipping point for an army before it broke. A series of events leading to its destruction. An army without water, surrounded by enemies, in a burning hellscape, was a dry twig under heavy foot. It snapped easily. In clusters, Raymond's infantry tossed shields and spears, running for water, along the slopes of the Horns of Hattin. They were close enough for all the men around him to see it. The centre held formation, still marching for the van. But Cutnose could feel the impact of witnessing their allies falling apart. A rising terror bubbled from Guy's host, crushing any bravery among them with every step. Lightly armoured Saracen cavalry with spears charged Raymond's fleeing infantry with whoops and war cries. The screams of the dying were drowned out by the thunder of hooves. Raymond's knights spurred into action. Red and white caparisons rippled as the mounts picked up speed. Banners waved and lances were couched. A spark of promise fluttered in Cutnose's chest. If they could break the enemy cavalry ahead of them, the path would be clear to march the remaining 6 miles to Tiberias. They would lose many to thirst and arrows, but it was still possible enough that the army could make it. The red-clad knights disappeared in a cloud of dust, riding away from their infantry, who bolted for the village of Hattin with its precious springs of water. The Saracen-like cavalry shifted into motion, most galloping after the easiest prey, the footmen. Others escaped the knights. The centre host continued its march toward the Horns of Hattin. Cutnose risked a glance at the king. He gripped his reins tightly. Then he would stand in his stirrups before glancing behind him once more. A towering noble next to him shouted at him, but Guy only repeated the process of watching one third of his army disintegrate into sand and bone. The screams of Raymond's infantry were short-lived. It wasn't long before the horse archers resumed their assault on the slow-arriving centre. Arrows emitted shrill calls as they flew for Guy's men. Durand collapsed next to Cutnose. By Christ's beard, stand! He called to him. Patting the young man for wounds, he growled, You aren't stuck through! Durand's mouth hung open as he tried to breathe. No arrow had found the man. The heat had struck him down. Cutno slung his shield. The man behind him dodged him, but the next man ran into him, and Cutno shoved him away and gripped Durand's face. Get up, boy! The young man mumbled gibberish. Another soldier stumbled over them. Arrows continued falling among them. A soldier sank to his knees with a squeal next to them. Arrow lodged through his cheek and out his jaw. Cutno switched hands with his long axe and pulled Durand upright. The young man lost his footing and fell into his arms. He started to drag the man alongside him. Another spearman collapsed. The harder the men tried to stay together, the more they strung out. Soon there were too few men encircling the mounted knights and cross. A man ahead of them threw his shield to the ground and bolted in the direction of the hills. An arrow brought him down, but the other infantrymen didn't care. Raymond's mounted men surged into a valley, swiftly becoming a dust cloud. They will return, Cutnose told himself, but the soldier in him knew it was a foregone conclusion. The battle was over before it began. More of Guy's infantry started to break from the horns. Guy spoke rapidly to the nobles at his sides, pointing with his free hand, but nothing changed. Then the last of the infantry bolted. Cutno snarled in disgust, running after them. We are a herd of goats, hounded by a pack of wolves. He gripped Durand's belt tighter, hauling the young man beside him. The army of Jerusalem turned to dust before their eyes. 2.
Keep moving,
Cutnose breathed. Chest heaving, he dragged Durand, using his long axe as a walking stick to help them navigate the gravelly terrain. The land gradually sloped upward toward the crests of the hills of Hattin, the incline adding to the Christians' miserable flight. Arrows fell. Footmen dropped with screams. Every man tried to save his own skin in a rout, and every man was thirsty. Their singular desire was to quench their thirst at Hattin's springs, but it was all an illusion. Even if they reached the water, they would still need to form a battle line and fight the Saracens, and the wide-eyed footmen were too crazed to consider their predicament. Guy and his knights had remained near the true cross, surrounding it as they used their mounts and bodies to protect it. The wagons slowly floundered on the road, each hail of arrows winnowing the knights' resolve. The enemy was too close for any of the footmen to care about the cross for long. Ahead of Cutnose, a company of riders swept through them, spears thrust. Christians were impaled and driven into the ground. Blades slashed, reflecting the sun like lightning strikes. A footman lost his head. It kicked up dust and blood as it rolled down the hill. More of the Christians were trampled and thrown to the ground, bones breaking, skulls cracking. Many simply collapsing in terrified exhaustion. In a moment, the riders were gone. A dust cloud had taken their place. Men lay strewn about dying on the hill slope. Spearmen were normally a formidable formation against light cavalry. But in disarray, they were no better than scared sheep. Those still standing kept moving, hacking and coughing. Move or die. Thunder roared along Cutnose's flank. A band of horsemen came for them. He wasn't sure if the previous Saracens had turned around for another go, or if these were a new group. It didn't matter. Hooved death reigned. Cutnose dropped Durand. The riders swarmed them. He ducked as a rider screamed, Allah! His sword lashing air as he galloped past. Cutnose shifted his head as the rider cut at him with a rearward strike, the tip dangerously close. The rider was out of range again. Durand lay in a dazed heap. Cutnose dragged him by the belt like a naughty child he meant to beat. Another Saracen made for them. He discarded Durand back to the ground, grasping his long axe with both hands. He set his feet and didn't wait long for the rider. A war cry escaped his lips, and he swept his long axe into the horse's neck. The blade bit deep.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?